We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Talking Buffalo, featuring conversations with guests from around the world of sports, media, pop culture, and all things Buffalo. With your host, Patrick Moran.
All right, what is going on, everybody? Happy Casual Friday. Welcome to Talking Buffalo, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Patrick Moran. Thank you very much, as always, for locking in. It is Casual Friday. That means, as always, I am joined by my good buddy, Aaron Quinn from Cover One.
How you doing, Pat?
We probably should have thought, I should have thought a lot more over the course of last week on how this week might go. Never really, I don't know, I should have envisioned Bills losing. We talked about it, but in my heart of hearts, I never thought we'd be doing it this week. But.
Sure. I think that was that's the like weird part of where we're at as a franchise. And for us as content creators, it's a weird place to be, because I'm still a fan, right, at heart. But the last couple of weeks, I have been talking to the guys at Cover One, like, what's our plan for the offseason? Because it can end really abruptly. And, you know, you got to have a plan in place as a content creator for the weekly schedule. Like, where's everybody's head going to be at? We, Greg and I, did not do our show last night, Wednesday night. We wanted to take a week, breathe on it a little bit, and we'll pick back up here this next week. Those are conversations you have to have. So I was a little prepared for it, which I do think helps to be where I'm at now, getting ready to talk to you. But it's the unfortunate part of how the NFL works, man. One game just ends your season. And there is no other scenario like this in major sports, right? Like, when Stanley Cup finals, you're going to get a whole week and a half of being able to be in a series and get yourself back in. But NFL, man, it's that one bad game, you don't show up, that's it, man. It's a wrap.
To clarify, it's not so much that I never thought the Bills could lose to the Bengals. Sure. It's that I didn't think the Bills would lose to the Bengals in the fashion that they lost to them to end their season. What was your feeling? Yeah. Like, you know, let's put aside this podcast. Let's put aside your podcast. Put all that stuff aside. As a Bills fan, because you're a Bills fan first and foremost, what's your feeling like watching that game? It was the first time all year where it was a really helpless, like, what in the world is going on type of game. It was tough to watch. As a fan, forget about creating content. As a fan, it was really hard to watch.
Well, I will say, and this is, some people probably think I'm bullshitting here, but I don't have two hats. Like, I use the same, the way I watch as a fan in the way I give my takes on the post game show, they don't change, right? Like, this is just how I am. There's no shtick or anything in terms of that and covering the team. And so I was frustrated. There's no good feelings about getting your butt handed to you on your home, in your home stadium. You know, we heard a lot about, we got to get these playoff games at home. We got to get these playoff games home. Well, you have one and then you get punched in the face. We've heard how the weather is an advantage. Well, you had weather. Like, there's all these things that we've heard, and they didn't take advantage of it in the moment. Now, it feels terrible. I said it on the post game show. It's worse than 13 seconds, in my opinion. Like, at 13 seconds, I at least left that season feeling like, man, the only thing that can stop us is a coin flip, or the only thing that can stop us is somebody else matching a generational performance. Like, and I felt really good there, where getting beat in this manner, because everybody reacts to recency bias, that is a real thing. I'm guilty of it too. We're stuck with that final taste in our mouths. And that's going to be it's going to be a very difficult off season to move through the emotion of what we felt last, to really where the big picture is for this team and where we should feel about this team going forward. Because I think there's probably some people probably think I'm on the wrong side of this, on the homer high end side of feeling good. But I think there's all the people that are way too far on the other side. The answer is probably in the middle, in the gray area, probably more to what Von Miller said of some of the tweaks and running it back kind of thing.
You know, sometimes Dave Portnoy could be a troll.
I hate him. I think he's a scumbag.
I know how you feel about him, but I do want to pull up a tweet because I did.
Sure. Broken clocks are right twice a day too.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those broken clock moments. He tweeted this during right after the game or that night. I honestly can't imagine being a Bills fan right now. There is nothing worse than thinking it's your year and then getting pummeled like that. You blink and poof, it's over.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Patriots had some of those.
Oh, sure. For sure.
Yeah, right. But, like they beat up in the playoffs a couple times. They thought they were champs.
Sure. Absolutely, man. But we really did. I did. I thought this was the Bills year. I know you did as well.
I thought last year was too.
Yeah.
Will say when we step back, Pat, I did think this was the Bills year, but like, I was annoyed with some of Brandon Bean's press conference, and we can get into some of that here on the show, but
we will.
I do think there was some honesty in that, especially when he was talking about, I think people, one, deem success, there's only one form of success in the NFL, and that it's a Super Bowl. And I think that's a fan and media mentality. I think within the NFL itself, there's many forms of success, and Super Bowl is the ultimate, and that's the one that's glorified and everybody's going after, and you will lose your job if you continually don't perform for it. But the Bills, by historical measures, by if you compare them to pretty much teams across the board throughout the history of the NFL, right now, the spot that we are in as a fan base and our team is in is still a good, successful NFL franchise. And people are going to pile on me that that's some loser mentality because if you don't win the Super Bowl, that's not. I swear to God, that's a fan and media narrative. It's way overblown. There's a very slim margin between what we consider to be great coaches and great organizations of all time and where the Bills are at right now. And it really is just a couple games, a couple plays. Like, they're really close. I think overreacting to the results of the most recent game would be a mistake in this case. I think there's concerns. I think you're probably going to bring up a bunch of valid concerns here today, but I think some, for me at least, my perspective has changed when I go look up, people clamor for Sean Payton. Let's get Sean Payton in here. He's won a Super Bowl. This is freaking almost 20 years ago that he won a Super Bowl, and he has not been successful since, and he had terrible playoff exits with a Hall of Fame quarterback and a stacked roster that was way over the salary cap, and he still couldn't perform and match that Super Bowl run. The cachet that comes with a Super Bowl early in somebody's career, I think it's overstated. John Harbaugh, Sean McDermott's been better than John Harbaugh over the last 5 years. He's been on par almost with Andy Reid. Andy Reid took 6 years with KC after 13 years of not making or winning a Super Bowl. He went 6 years with KC and he went 2-5 and in the playoffs in his first 6 years. Like, how we deem success and the angst for a Super Bowl, I get, but I think we still need to ride the course. There was a plan in place for this team. We praise how meticulous they are. We praise all the things they've done for the past whatever months, but then we get these results and we want to throw everything away. We want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I just don't think that's the right way.
I don't disagree with you. I'll say this though. And I think this is part of the problem. Like from week one through the playoff exit, there are losses. You know, there were a lot of games where they almost beat themselves. I mean, talent won out at the end. They could have lost more than three games.
They could have also been a perfect, like there are a handful of plays and 8 points away from.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. You lose three games by 8 points total. I mean, you go to the Miami game, half the team's out and they're playing in 90,000 degree weather. Minnesota, they blow a 3-score lead and Josh Allen fumbles a snap or forget the 3-score lead. If he handles that snap, bam, game over. And then in the second half, they just completely shit the bed against the Jets. But yeah, to your point, you take away a couple plays and you're potentially 16-0. I know that sounds crazy, but it's not really that crazy. It's not.
And injuries aren't an excuse because every team faces injuries, but this felt like a Chargers year. You know, the Chargers just always get dealt these massive blow injuries. This for the Bills, and we haven't had that in 3 or 4 seasons. We aren't used to that. And we lost all pros at multiple levels of the defense. Like, not a lot of teams can overcome that and still have everything right in front of them. Right. They still had a chance to beat that Cincinnati team and get exactly what they wanted. And a really good team came in and beat them. Like, that sucks. But there's worse problems to have in the NFL right now.
Injuries were a very big factor for the Bills during the regular season. There's no question about it. But you get to the playoffs and you can make a very fair case that the Bills were on the better side of the injury issues with both teams they played. I mean, look how decimated Miami was, including their quarterback 2 weeks ago. And then you go into this game against Cincinnati where they're missing literally 3/5 of their starting line in a corner.
Well, I will say, I've had this thought about, a lot of people have brought up the Cincinnati offensive line, and it was like they performed better than expected, good on their coaching, kind of shame on the Bills for not being able to take advantage of some of that. The Bills also were, again, in that game without Daquan Jones, who was just another loss on piling on some of this. But also, I think when we compare the Bills unit, I think the Bills are also got a few backups along their offensive line. So I think, like, okay, Cincinnati was playing backups, but I think the Bills starters are backup level too. So like that I think was kind of a draw. Like, I'm not trying to be a jerk to the offensive line, but I don't think they're good. Like, I think it is replacement level players. And so, yeah, Cincinnati was playing the same, probably below average replacement level players that the Bills have. And some of those positions.
I'm laughing because you're right. And I'm getting a little bit off topic with where I was going with this, but I will say, you put out a tweet this week. By the way, Aaron Quinn 716, make sure you followed him. You put out a tweet, you showed a clip of Roger Saffold just getting
Brown got beat pretty bad on that too.
He did, but man, and you just, I look at Roger Saffold and I'm like, holy shit, man. I mean, like, you could have played left guard on that play and did a more effective job than he did. But anyway, getting back to what I was saying, yes, it the loss stings, but to me, they lost to a team that's very good. I'm not that shocked. I'm just shocked. Well, I'm not shocked now that I've learned more about this team throughout the week and hearing players speak and coaches speak and talk about a lot of stuff that they went to. So yeah, there's a lot of context that maybe in the moment I didn't get. To me, it was
we probably should have seen the writing on the wall now in hindsight with the way they performed against Miami
and New England.
Those were not good teams, that it shouldn't have been those games that they were. And then the week leading up, like, it definitely sent signals that on Wednesday there was a lot of talk about, hey, we're doing a walkthrough, but we really got to be on our P's and Q's, like, our coaches trusting us. That felt like very conservative and like, guys are tired, we got to manage this roster, we got to limp through here and get as good as we can. And that just doesn't feel like what Brandon Bean was talking about, is get going into the postseason trending in the right direction. And that includes energy, that includes how you're playing on the field and how you're performing. It seems like they just really ran out of gas after everything that happened with everything, really, and then just pinnacled with everything that went on with DeMar. It seemed like they just kind of coasted on, hey, our Josh Allen and our talent is superior to these two teams we can play. But then when you go up against a team that is balanced, that is good, that is focused and has a legitimate shot at the Super Bowl also, I think it was just too much.
I want to put this out there. I'm not speaking for Aaron, so if he feels differently, he's certainly entitled to. I'm saying that, in my opinion, in hindsight now, I think the Bills they emptied the tank against New England. That was a very emotional game. It was literally just days after what happened to DeMar. But if you really look and break that game down, Nyheim Hines' 2 touchdown returns was big. Yeah. The Bills' defense that game did not look good. They gave up 3 touchdown drives of more than 74 yards or more that game at home against New England, a game that they desperately wanted to win to get the number 2 seed so they get home field for at least 2 weeks. I think they kind of emptied out the tank. That Miami
they also didn't have – that was not a normal week of preparation, which also is not fair to judge a team on. Even against a bad team, you still have to want as close to a normal week as you can.
And then the following week, like I said, I mean, they kind of – not kind of, they did skate by. They escaped Miami at home with the 3rd-string quarterback. That was a very it was an ugly game, but a surviving advance in the playoffs, you know that. And that's what they did.
But you still had glimpses of, even with the mistakes. This is the interesting thing about why I do think it was burnout at the end here, because Bills made a ton of mistakes in that Miami game. And the talk all week was, man, if the Bills don't beat themselves and they don't turn the ball over, there's nobody we can't beat in the NFL. And they didn't. Against the Bengals, the problem wasn't turnovers. It wasn't Josh playing sloppy. I mean, I do think 3 and outs are turnovers, and you had a handful of those early in the game, but it wasn't the sloppy play that we've seen allow teams to get into this game. Cincinnati just straight up beat every rep in the line of scrimmage they had.
Yes.
Every rep with defensive backs, they were more physical. They had wins. It was just at all layers of the game. And when you watched it back, I think it was more, you hear what the players were saying, to your point about the exhaustion, and just that they could sense the feeling and the energy leading into it. And then when you watch the tape, it does show. It's there. It's all over the tape. And I do think, especially on the defensive side of the ball, man, the lack of presence of DaQuan Jones was so noticeable in Ed Oliver's play and what the defensive ends were doing, especially in All-Pro Matt Milano's play and how Tremaine Edmonds was able to play in that game. And I think it was just the straw that broke the camel's back on the side of the defense. And then you had, you know, you had Cam Lewis and Jaquan Johnson out there for a period of time. Like this, it just got so into depth. It got so into exhaustion when you needed to be at your best and performing and peaking at the right time. And the Bills just didn't capture that.
I would say this too. I want to be careful because absolutely, I agree. The Bills definitely ran out of gas, and I really don't think you can dispute that. But at the same token, I mean, you hit on it. I want to make sure that Cincinnati gets a lot of credit too, because they're a very good team and they played a hell of a game too. I want to, you know, just a quick tweet from Mike Catalano in Rochester. I thought he summarized the game in like 280 characters perfectly. He said offense, you know, the OL, the offensive line was handled by Cincinnati, missed on big plays, defense pushed around by a backup offensive line, no pressure on Burrow, poor tackling, confusion in secondary, the coaching, Dorsey, no imagination, Frazier never adjusted, McDermott wasted timeouts, punted too often, team not ready. I mean, I think that's fair. And again, emotional, you know, drainage, I definitely think they were suffering from that, and it's legit. But I think that's fair. I thought they were just dominated, man.
I think it's also fair to Bean's point, and not a scapegoat or an excuse. I think to the famous Mike Tyson quote, like, everybody's got a plan till you get punched in the mouth, right? And going down 14-0 very quick. And I do think Brandon Bean's right. Like, I know I felt confidence when Cincy took that first drive and went, because I've seen it on tape a lot from Cincy, and I've seen on tape a lot from the Bills of giving up those first drives. But usually they get a little bit of time to adjust, and they clamp up a little bit. They stop it to field goal drives, or they get a couple stops. This time the Bills go three and out again, or they go out three and out two times between possessions. And I don't think the defense ever really got a chance to settle into the game early on. And they got the lead, and then it's hard to play from two possessions down against a team like the Bengals that has balance and that is playing more physical and attacking your offensive line with different types of blitzes and getting you in bad positions. And so the Bills started to press. Like, I think a lot of teams do this. Again, I think if we look back historically throughout other playoffs of really great teams that, you know, should have advanced, you see games like this where they just get outmatched and they just get outmanned. And I think there is a lot of context and nuance. There is a lot of blame too. I think a lot of what Catalano said is true. They weren't getting pressures, right? There was confusion on the back end. They didn't meet the moment again this year. And I think that's a problem, but I don't think it's the problem that everyone, or as terrible of a problem as everybody believes it is. I think everything's still in a pretty good spot.
Yes. I want to turn my attention to, because this is where I do have a problem. And again, it's also easy, Aaron, to be a Monday morning quarterback, or in this case, a casual Friday with Aaron Quinn quarterback. Okay. Plenty of days to digest it. But in fairness to me, I'm going to say this too. I had a problem with it at the moment, and I even talked about it before the game. Given what happened, that your team is running on fumes. Okay. And pretty much the team admitted that afterwards. Maybe we didn't know that until we heard from players and coaches and stuff.
Which maybe some of it's more leaning into an excuse. I think people are feeling that way, that it seems like an excuse. But I think there's legitimate. If you're a human and you've experienced any of the type of stuff, you know that there's some truth to it, right?
I do too. I believe it too. I do believe to some extent they were definitely running on fumes. I believe Matt Milano, the way he was in the locker room after the game.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Knowing that, okay? Mm-hmm. And knowing, and this is where I turn my attention to Sean McDermott right now, where I have a couple problems with him. Knowing that your team's running on fumes, knowing that you played this team 3 weeks ago, that the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday Night Football won the coin toss, said, I ain't deferring, took the ball, drove right down the field, got up 7-0, got that crowd going. It was a crazy crowd that night. Just the fast start that they got, you come back to Buffalo for a playoff game, and you win the toss. I have a problem with Sean, and I know, again, it's easy to be an armchair quarterback after the fact. If they had stopped Cincinnati and Cincinnati punts, then I sound stupid. I get that. But to me, I thought the Bills made a mistake. mm-hmm. by deferring, considering that you're running out of fumes. What better way to get yourself going and get your crowd going than to take the opening kickoff, go down the field, score first, and send a message to them that, hey, now you're in our house. And I keep coming back to this point. It's easy to say that now in hindsight.
For sure.
But I felt, even at the time, I'm like, I remember that a couple weeks ago, how quick Cincinnati started. I also know how slow the Bills this season have started on defense. And then they mm-hmm. usually, you know, tighten it up. I go back to the Bears game, lots of games where they just looked really bad on defense on the first or two drives. And then they would tighten up the grips. Right. I thought the Bills should have taken the ball, try to score first. You get down there, you get up 3-0, 7-0. Crowd is completely, I mean, they were in it for the opening kickoff for the defense, so I can't say like the crowd sure. wasn't in it. But you get up early, maybe they get your team going, maybe get a little more confidence, and maybe that raises the energy level. But instead, they win the toss, they kick it. Cincinnati does exactly what they did 3 weeks ago against the Bills. And now you're like, you know, here we go, man. This team's really good, and they just shoved the ball down our throat. Do you feel, do you think what I'm saying makes sense, or is it just purely me just being able to talk in hindsight now?
I think you did preface that. Like, there is a lot of hindsight baked into that. Because, again, if we take that approach where they get the ball, touchdown is the best scenario. And I do
and
think
I know you're a double dip at the end of the half.
Well, yeah. So touchdown is the best scenario, right? Open the game, get a touchdown. I think there's a lot of data that points to teams that score touchdowns first, especially in playoff games, are going to probably win the game. The coin flip to that is the worst case scenario to that is that you take the ball and you go 3-0, which is what the Bills did when they did get the ball mm-hmm. and you give it back to Cincinnati and then they go score. Because then to this point, now you don't get the ball at half. You don't have an opportunity at the end of half to double dip. I actually think playing those results negates the fact that I believe this game was lost after, I think Bengals went up 17-0. Cause the, if I'm remembering correctly, it was, they scored on the first two drives and the Bills held them to a field goal on the third drive, was it? Something like that. It was right around there. I believe it was 17-0. And the Bills got the ball back. It was finally a stop by the defense. The Bills get the ball back with, I think, right around 2 minutes, which this year they've been very good in the final 2 minutes of halves of just going down and getting points. You didn't even need seven in this scenario. You just needed points. You needed to activate a double dip because you were stealing a free possession, right? Like, you're getting back-to-back possessions at a team that's up on you by two possessions. So all you got to do is score on these two possessions and you're within the game. And now everything's possible, right? Now you can readjust your game plan back to what you wanted to do. You're not three possessions back where you have to really press and play to get back in this game. And everybody's trying to make that one play. And that's not a good spot to be in. Being within a one score margin is where you want to be. And they did move the ball pretty well at the end of that first half. And then they ended up having to punt. The offense stalled out there. And I do probably think you want that back, right? Like, you want the way that final part of that series ended. But I think, again, a lot of people are arguing the results because people are saying go for it. And I do think if you go for it and get it, now you're really in this game. But the other scenario is they did punt and they pinned the Cincinnati offense. And the Cincinnati offense still almost got into field goal range with like 30 seconds left. So the idea that you would have gone down, what, 3-4 possessions at that point going into half and getting the ball, that would have been an even worse case scenario. So I know a lot of people are upset with a lot of Sean McDermott's decision-making in this game. And again, I think there's a lot of blame to go around, but I think it's more, I just tweeted this out to, we could talk about probably one of the upcoming changes that's right before we went live here. I think some of the changes are going to be more bottom up than top down, because I think it is refining some of the stuff here. I don't think, you know, the timeouts you can question, the punts that Sean McDermott did in this game, while you want him to be more aggressive when you're down, they still were coin flips. By every measure of data, they were a coin flip. And the worst case scenario result buries you just as much as successfully completing it gets you back in the game.
I don't agree with the punts. More on that in a second. You're almost right. They were down 17-0, but they were down 14-0 right away. It was touchdown, 3-and-out. Touchdown, 3-and-out.
Right.
Then Minnesota got the ball, and the Bills only made two stops, which, by the way, I remember tweeting us at halftime, and this is pretty kind of sad, but Matt Milano obviously played great. Besides that, Dane Jackson was the only guy in the Bills' defense in the whole first half who even remotely made a play.
That was a great pass breakup by him.
Yeah, it was. Dane Jackson had a pretty strong game, I thought. Yep. But anyway, yeah. So the Bills go up, or Josh Allen scores on a 1 yard run. It's 14-7. That was the only time in the game where it's like, all right, man, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Yeah.
But then Cincinnati takes the ball. and they go then right back down the field, and they ended up with a field goal only because, again, Milano kind of jarred the ball just ever so slightly from Chase. So
yes, the touchdown, the review touchdown that came back. Yeah.
Right.
That
right.
was your opportunity, right? You get a slice of momentum. Here we go. And they there was a couple times in that first half and then started the third quarter where they had like a little window to make something happen, and they just could not get that to happen.
Even Milano had a sack. That was like the one time they stopped Cincinnati on third down the whole first half. This is where I don't agree, because I thought it was pretty obvious that the Bills, forget about emotion or any of that stuff, just physically on the field, they were not stopping Cincinnati. It was just looking, and it was looking easy. And I felt like that fourth and 10, I get it. Fourth and 10 is not an easy play to convert. I understand that, but you're down
17-2. I'm not advocating.
Right. You're down 17-7. You can't stop them. And everyone in the crowd and everyone watching TV knows that you're not going to beat the Bengals. You're not going to hold them to 3 points in the second half and pull this out 24-20. You got to score.
And although the Ravens did.
Right. Fourth and 10.
I mean, teams have. That's the other thing about this, is that all the data leading up to it was the Bengals haven't put together a complete game, but then they did, right?
Yeah, they did. It's fourth and 10 from the 41-yard line with 40 seconds left. I can't buy the punt. And it goes back to just what it feels like, and maybe somebody could show me some metrics and stats and prove me wrong, and if you do, I'll tip my hat to you. But it just feels like every year the Bills during the regular season – I think maybe they go for this. It's just like this team seems a lot more aggressive during the regular season, and then it gets to the playoffs, and more specifically these last 3 years when they lose games, and Sean McDermott just gets in ultra-conservative mode. And I thought that not going forward on fourth and 10, I feel like if it was the Bengals and the Bills were up 17-7 and the Bengals were at the 41-yard line, fourth and 10, I feel like Zach Taylor goes for it. I don't have a problem with them putting on fourth and 2 in the second half.
But again, though, this is like to the deferring. Like, I don't think it's an ultra conservative move to punt in this scenario. I think it's a 50-50 coin toss. The Ben Baldwin bot that does out the fourth down decisions, I think called it basically 50-50. So it wouldn't be ultra conservative to punt it. It's leans to the side of conservative. The downside is if you do turn the ball over there, which the offense did not give me a lot of faith up to that point that they would convert a fourth and 10 also against this defense. We're talking about how this defense was performing, but the offense was also being manhandled and Josh Allen was running for his life. I didn't trust Roger Saffold to block on a fourth and 10 where guys have to get downfield and develop. So I do understand the decision. Again, I would think we're playing the results, but if we're playing the results, if you turn the ball over on downs there and you give Joe Burrow that offense that is dominating you a chance to put up seven with like 40 seconds left in the half, that's it. That's a wrap. Your game's over. You're going, you have to play a whole nother half of football without even having a shot.
Let's say though, let's just say it's 50-50 that the Bills convert that. Even if it's 40-60, you're down 10, you're playing a team that is just moving the ball up and down the field on you.
You're earning another possession at half.
He's coaching to me. He's coaching out of a position of fear. He's more concerned that the Bengals are going to stop him on fourth down and add to their lead going into the half than he is about the Bills getting more into the game and getting the ball.
I do think there's a conversation I think that needs to be had with, I think this needs to be that leadership council that Sean McDermott talks so much about. Here's where I'm frustrated, right? You talk about this and player driven leadership and all this stuff, but then it seems to me from an outside observer that sort of influence that you want to give your players and that connection between the players and the staff sort of stops in big moments. And I don't think that they trust the players in big moments. I think they trust in the scheme and taking maybe a conservative approach and trusting in the defensive scheme that, yeah, they have been beat a few times, but at some point it's going to lock in. I think they don't trust the players as much as they do the coaching and the scheme. And I think at some point we need to have more of that player-driven influence be part of the offense, like Dorsey. Get Dawson Knox involved in the ways that are going to get Dawson Knox productive. Get Gabe Davis involved in the ways that are going to get him productive, because there's a conversation this week that we, the Buffalo Bills, don't have the roster and the staff and the people to keep up with these top four teams. And I think that's bullshit. Frankly.
So do I.
I think it's complete bullshit. I think they have one of the best five rosters in the NFL. I think it's on par with all those teams. I think usage and coaching was the problem in cases, and they were good enough to get through a season and be 13-3. I think they're good enough to be run for another shot at the Super Bowl, but they do need to refine some of this and somebody needs to be able to step up in that offensive room and defend. We just paid Dawson Knox this money. You need to get him involved in the offense. Gabe Davis is supposed to be giving us wide receiver two production on a consistent basis. Why isn't this happening? That needs to either come from players or Sean McDermott needs to step in. But those are the issues that I have. you know, with some of that lacking creativity, with some of where we're at.
Do you feel like with Sean McDermott now, based on what happened last year, look, a year or so ago, we had this conversation. I'm losing my mind. You're a little more even keeled than I am, about 13 seconds. And I hate talking about it, but I'm going to, because Sean McDermott blew the game last year in the last 13 seconds. I don't want to hear about Leslie Frazier. He contributed, sure, not once, twice. Sean McDermott calls timeout. He had all the time in the world to say, no, 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 this is not the look that we want to have.
Sure.
And Kansas City got two freebies to get in field goal range to send that game in overtime. And then it became about a coin flip. Should have never came down to a coin flip. Sure. So anyway, if you're mad at Sean McDermott over last year's 13 seconds, which I am, and I think a lot of fans are and should be, when you look at this year and just, again, I know the excuse, and it's not, I hate using the word excuses, because excuses just doesn't sound like the right word to use here, but
right.
It feels to me like there's more questions right now with Sean McDermott than answers when it comes to, not is this guy a great leader among men? He is. We knew that before the Cincinnati DeMar Hamlin thing, and we especially saw that in light of that. That's not to question. He gets his team ready to play during the regular season. They win a lot during the regular season. But he's not the same coach in the playoffs, it feels to me. Now, the competition is always better in the playoffs, of course, as well. You know, some detractors might point to the fact that the Bills beat up on chumps. This defense builds up their stats, you know, playing backups.
I mean, DVOA accounts for that. DVOA still suggests that the Bills are really good, right?
Like, yeah. And I do think they're good.
We had a first-place schedule this year. So, and it was harder than people thought it was in August, because we thought those Miami, Jets, even the Patriots games were going to be bigger cakewalks than they were. So the Bills schedule actually played out a little bit more difficult than I think people thought it was.
If you had questions about Sean McDermott being the right coach to get you over the hump, take you to the promised land after last season, has any of that been answered this year? Not for me. He's not going to be fired.
He's not going to be fired. The hot seat doesn't start until if the exit's similar next year, then the hot seat starts. He's not even fired. You're starting the hot seat then. In my opinion, I think the statement you said is wrong, in that there's more questions than there are answers. We have way more answers than we do questions. The question is just a big one. Can he do it when he get his team ready when he needs to the most and get them over that hump? I don't know. Like, I don't know if Sean McDermott's the guy or not. I think.
Do you feel he coaches differently in the playoffs than he does in the regular season? Do you notice it?
It's tough. I mean, they're very different scenarios than they've probably faced. Like, the way they got punched in this game wasn't really something that they faced a whole lot over the last year. Like, I think Brandon Bean is right. Since back to that Indy game where they really got beat up and pushed around the field. And so that's a different situation. I do think that he's made mistakes. But again, Pat, like, I'm big on viewing our team in comparing them to their peers across the league. I would urge everyone to go back and watch last year's postseason, which people thought was one of the best postseasons in the history of the NFL, because it was all one score games down to final possessions. It was great football. Coaches were just fumbling all over themselves that entire postseason, into the Super Bowl, man. Go back and watch the final 5 minutes of that Super Bowl. Neither coach wanted to win. They both made mistakes and put their players in positions to fail. I think it's more common than people think. I think coaches are seasons end more like Sean McDermott's did more often than not. Only one team wins the Super Bowl every single year outside of Bill Belichick. It doesn't happen with consistency. Most coaches go out like this. We want to get that one. I don't know if McDermott's the guy. I'm staying the course. They put a big plan in place years ago. I want them to tweak it as they go, but I'm staying the course, right? We got this cap corrected. We've got a good roster. I think it's a top five NFL roster. I want to see this out. I don't think he's Marty Schottenheimer. Greg Vorse, Cover One content creator, put out a great tweet of like, he has to go like 1-13 over his next few postseasons to get even towards the record of what Marty Schottenheimer had in the postseasons. Not that same conversation. I think he's closer probably to Jim Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, maybe even a Sean Payton, just on the offense or defensive side of the ball, in that, like, that's okay to have sustained success and be in the playoffs and be a team that's competing each and every year. I think we look back at these coaches and these teams and think that they had more success than they did. But again, I think most of them ended their seasons in similar manners or similar fashions to where Sean McDermott is right now. Andy Reid, the amount of choke playoff losses that Andy Reid went through before he and Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl is astounding. I would still take those 20 years of Andy Reid coach teams versus the 17 years of going up and down with mediocre coaches and changing every time something goes wrong that the Bills already had. Like, I'm willing to ride this out. There is a spot where we got to move on from McDermott, but man, I think we're a couple years away from that conversation.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Sports fans who like to wager, which is pretty much everyone these days, I'm here to tell you about OddsTrader, the number one site for all your game day bets. If you're looking for a one-stop space on these interwebs to compare odds live up to the minute, look no further than OddsTrader. Why is OddsTrader so valuable to you? Well, for starters, it's the perfect place to compare betting odds and lines from all the major sports books. Why does it matter? Well, it matters because if you're liking a team, you want to throw down some cash on them. You're getting your choice of what's getting you the best odds, the best lines. It's a chance to find the highest payouts if you're betting the underdogs or profiting the most if you're going to go with the favorites. OddsTrader also allows you to compare all the different sign-up codes and promos from the sportsbooks to get the best deal out there for you. If that's not enough, the OddsTrader app gives you the player stats, key game stats, injury reports, projected game day weather, which could be a huge thing to know in certain situations. OddsTrader also has a bet tracker so that you can keep records of all your games that you have wagers on and all your betting activity. Simply put, OddsTrader gives you quite literally everything you need to make the most informed bets humanly possible. If you're into betting on sports games, any sport, by the way, make sure you go to OddsTrader.com/BlueWire. Again, that's OddsTrader.com/BlueWire. OddsTrader, the number one site for all your game day bets. You've referenced the Buffalo Bills being a top five roster a couple times, and I completely agree with it. I will say, though,
this past year, I don't know what it'll look like.
The one area that concerns me, and you talked about this on Twitter, you talked about a little bit on this show, the offensive line is not good enough, just flat out. Forget about that. They didn't even have any injuries going into the playoffs. I just don't think this line is good enough. I think Morris is solid at center. I think Dawkins is all right at left tackle. I never thought he was a Pro Bowl tackle, including last year when he made the Pro Bowl. Bates had a nice end of the season last year. He was, this year. Roger Stafford, he's one and done. I don't see any scenario where they bring him back. Spencer Brown, I'm going to talk about him more specifically in a second because Brandon Bean made it a point to talk about him during his press conference, his season ender this week. But I'll tell you, on the other side of the ball, and yes, Daquan Jones, absolutely good point you made. Huge, huge loss. I would almost say
probably the pickup of the offseason now in hindsight, too.
Sure. Like, yeah.
Fantastic.
And I'll tell you right now, I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say this. And again,
I mean, Vaughn obviously was the pickup of the offseason, but the way Daquan influenced everything around him. Sorry.
Yes. Yes, for sure. And again, it's easy to say this now, but I'll tell you what, you can have back Kappa and Jonah Williams, and let me have Daquan Jones for that game because I think he does a lot of things. Anyway, here's the point I was getting to. And I remember this before the season, Joe Marino from Locked On Bills, he took like 10 of us and asked us to rank Buffalo Bills players in order of importance from 1 to 10. And obviously everyone, Josh Allen was number one in everyone's list. And then after that, it would vary. Yeah, that's right. One person didn't have him number one. Don't want to get into that right now. But anyway, 9 out of 10 did. And I love you, Jay Spence. Anyway, all right. Everyone else from there, it varies. I had number two on the whole list of all the players on the team. I had Ed Oliver. I said,
and most important?
Most important to the Bills' success. And last year, I thought he was starting to take over games at times. And I'm like, all right, man, this kid is going to break out and become on that level of one of the top 4 to 6 defensive tackles maybe in the NFL. Didn't happen. I don't know if he peaked last year. I don't know what is going on. I know he had a couple injuries this year. But he gave the Bills, and let's just call it what it is, dude. He gave the Bills zero in the playoffs. Zero. He gave the Bills zero against the Bengals. Yeah, I think he had a half a tackle. It's just and I know stats can be so overrated for a defensive tackle. Doesn't always tell the story. Daquan Jones is a perfect example of that. Ed Oliver's got to do more than what he did. He was not good enough for the Bills down the stretch. He was terrible for the Bills. Maybe the Miami game he did okay against the run, but he got no pressure on Skylar Thompson. He had the biggest gift sack, actually, I've ever seen in my life. Literally unblocked, and then he got a sack last week. But he was garbage against the Bengals. I'm telling you right now, if there's 53 guys on this roster, the guy that I'm probably most angry at as a player is Ed Oliver right now. I thought he gave him nothing. Anyway, my point was this. You're right. Top five in the NFL roster, yes. But they're not good enough in the trenches, especially the offensive line, and more specifically on the defensive line, Ed Oliver. That's my take, anyway.
I think you're too harsh on Ed Oliver in his season. Again, I think when we reflect on it, the injury was significant. That was, what, like 3 weeks early in the season. I think that stymied some of the production. The way he plays, that type of leverage and ankle, like you'll see him on film take on a double team, plant his knee into the ground, and like push up. Like the way that he plays, I think that ankle injury bugged him for a little while, which probably looked worse for production for him. But even watching through that Bengals game, man, I saw a number of times where he was generating pressure. And here's the problem. I said it all week leading up to that game. If your pressure isn't resulting in sacks with Joe Burrow, it's almost a liability, right? Because he plays so well under pressure and he's able to manipulate pockets. And in those scenarios, this is the Jerry Hughes conversation that we had for years, where Jerry Hughes was getting pressures and winning those matchups, and he was performing well individually. But I think the defensive line just, again, I came back to more disappointing of AJ Epenesa, Boogie Basham, not so much Shaq Lawson because he wasn't brought back to live up to his pick status, but some of these guys that you needed somebody to develop, and these were the moments. End of this season was the time for somebody to step into the role that they were drafted to be in, and nobody did that. I think Ed's played really well with Daquan. I think he's very disruptive. And I think if you had this defensive line, again, you can't make the excuse of health because every team faces it. But if you're lining up, I feel how much better do you feel about Von Miller, Daquan Jones, Ed Oliver, and Groot versus Ed Oliver with Groot without a premier edge rusher? And he's just kind of a regular, good, solid, contain, use my length guy with some below average rotational defensive lineman and a one-armed Jordan Phillips. And Tim Settle, I think, was another one that towards the end of the season here ran out of gas because I thought he played really well and would be a big part of this playoff push, but he was pretty silent and getting pushed around for his size. But Ed, I think, still gave it his all. I still think I love Ed as a player. Maybe the contract isn't as high as I thought it was going to be last year, the way he was looking, but that might be a benefit to the Bills. I'm still in on Ed Oliver. Still think he's a good havoc wrecking defensive tackle. We got to remember that the way we saw this defense last is a bad taste in our mouths. But again, every metric, DVOA, how they stood up to other teams, they were the highest run stuffing team in the NFL. That's a defensive line statistic. Matt Milano making an all pro and Ed Oliver getting people to Tremaine Edmonds finally getting people to say, hey, yeah, let's pay this guy, is a direct reflection of when your defensive line was healthy, how it impacted how everyone else was able to play, right? So again, I'm not ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater because we saw a poor performance. My big concern is, what's Von Miller look like next year? We just saw Trey White. Fans were real impatient with Trey White not coming back right when his injury happened, or coming back a year from when the injury happened. I think people are anticipating that Von will be earlier than that just because of the way he's talked. But I think that we probably have to anticipate not getting Von Miller back until a full year. We know the Bills are conservative with this stuff. We know they're not going to let player pressure push him onto the field. What's the Bills' defensive line look like for 12 weeks of a first place schedule next year with this same excuse sort of built in where, okay, well, we still don't have a premier pass rusher to go with Groot, to go with this defensive line. And that's my big concern heading into next year. It's not Ed Oliver not living up to where he's supposed to be. It's, I want to get this unit together the way it's supposed to be.
Yes, I still think Ed Oliver is supposed to be at this point a star player.
But you take TJ Watt off the Pittsburgh Steelers defensive line here throughout this year, right? And you saw a huge decrease in what they were able to do. And they still have good defensive tackles. They still had good players, but they operate at a different level when you remove a piece from it.
Well, let me ask you this. So we all know he's got his fifth-year option already. I think he's guaranteed like 10.7. It's somewhere between 10.3 and 10.7.
It's less than Wilkins, or Quinton Williams, I think.
Do you think the Bills, like I would have said a year ago that he's going to get that fifth-year option and priority one or two, if not Edmonds, priority two would be, let's get Ed Oliver locked up long-term. I'd be stunned right now if he gets an extension this offseason.
I don't know how the staff feels on him. I'm sure they want some of the growth that fans have been clamoring for. I think part of the issue here with Ed Oliver is the Aaron Donald comp that has just kind of followed him around his career as an undersized guy that was supposed to perform like Aaron Donald. And I think that's crazy unfair. I think Aaron Donald might be one of the best defensive players I've ever seen in my whole life. And so comps do hurt. I don't think he's ever going to be that, but I do think he adds a level of disruption from the interior that you don't have. And so I don't know if maybe he's not a long-term extension type of guy, but I don't trust right now Eric Washington to draft and develop the next Ed Oliver when I think Ed Oliver has the talent to be a disruptive player on the interior.
That's fair. Okay. Now, all right. That's fair. You could say that you don't trust the Bills. Maybe you don't trust Brandon Bean, who does not have a great success track record when it comes right now to taking defensive linemen early in this draft. Maybe you don't trust him to start over and take a defensive tackle. That's fair. I'm going to move on because we only got a limited amount of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can probably argue with you about
it. We got all offseason, Pat.
For an hour. And we do have an all offseason. I just think he was better last year than he was this year. So let's just move on from that. Brandon Bean had a press conference. Anything stand out for you, from it? I mean, he went typical amount of time. I said earlier, I kind of hinted at it. He talked about at length kind of Spencer Brown and fans. I think he called you guys scouts or what do you call it? Content.
Was he talking about us?
I think he was talking about Cover One. I think he was talking about you, Greg, and Eric personally and no one else. But anyway, he referenced the fact that he was injured this offseason. He did not have an offseason program. It's only in his second year.
Right,
he was not healthy and that he thought he played better in the second half. But he noticed and he obviously has seen it and heard it. Fans very down on him. So he went out of his way to talk up Spencer Brown, although he did say he would bring in competition, but I kind of got the gist that I think Spencer Brown's still your right tackle going forward. Said he'd love to have Poyer back, but I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I don't think there's any way that happens. And then, I don't know, kind of what I took away from it was just mainly you could almost expect a status quo. What were your takeaways from Brandon Bean?
Yeah, I was torn. I put out a tweet a little bit yesterday because I listened to it live and had a weird kind of feeling about it. It didn't seem like how I feel usually when I listen to Brandon Bean.
Right.
So I listened to it back again yesterday morning over coffee. And I think he made a lot of good points that got missed on fans in terms of perspective, right? Like I do think Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have a good perspective of where the plan is and what they see internally and how the NFL works and their comparison to the rest of the league. I think they are on par. I think they also see their flaws. I think it's a fine line of, you know me, Pat, I don't care about public accountability. I don't need the Bills to get out here and point fingers and give fans exactly the, you know, I don't need that fresh meat.
You were like that last year. I remember that.
On the same way, I do think that they'll handle some accountability inside, but what I don't want to be is bullshitted, right? Like, I don't want you to come out and spoon feed me kind of the BS. And I know that that is the PR plan for the Buffalo Bills. And so I get it, because I do like it in a lot of instances that they don't give you a lot of information, but I really wanted maybe a little bit more conversation about how he feels resources should be utilized in terms of protecting Josh Allen or in the trenches. Not necessarily, hey, we made these. I don't need him to say this guy was a failure, that was a failure, but kind of owning to the what we've done and the way that we've done it maybe hasn't been good enough to get the results that we're looking for, because we're in the same spot here again. And so I felt like there's maybe a little bit of BS to some of what he was saying, and I don't want to be fed. It felt a little used car salesman-y at times. But I think his perspective was fine. The Spencer Brown stuff's a little annoying because it feels Cody Ford-ish, right? Like, it's a guy he picked and he's going to come in and defend. I think there's probably some of those, that context matters. Even to the video I posted about Roger Saffold, I think you need context. It's a little unfair of me to post just a bad rep out there, right? And I think there's probably some good reps on his film here this year, but ultimately it hasn't been good enough. And I've seen Spencer Brown get walked back a ton. I think he's just too tall. I don't think he has the right size to play the position. I think they bet on traits and maybe didn't have won. Maybe he'll pan out. But what I don't want to be is just told or kind of condescended to, talk down to. And that's where I felt the, you know, that you brought up that comment about social media scouts and stuff. That came off a little bit of like,
very uncharacteristic of Brandon Bean.
For a guy that says he doesn't pay attention to social media, that's a little bit of a weird comment. Lies. Also say, yeah, they see everything.
Lies.
And it felt to me, maybe because I'm involved in, and I'm not an online scout, I don't claim to be, but I'm involved in this, it felt a little condescending to me and a little bit of like gatekeeping, where like, we're in the NFL, so we have the information that you just don't have and don't understand. And I think that's total bullshit. I think scout is a low paying, really hard job where you're traveling constantly. I think a bunch of dudes that I work with and have worked with in the past, NFL teams would grab in a heartbeat, but their jobs are better, right? Like, so don't give me this like, you guys don't understand really what's going on and I don't want to hear it. That's a condescending kind of gatekeeping mentality, which I've never heard from Brandon Bean. Bean is that I love Brandon Bean. I don't want this comma. I trust him still implicitly. I think he's one of the best GMs in football. I think most teams in the NFL right now, Pat, would love for the top of their team and the power structure of their team to be Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, and Josh Allen. I think a lot of teams would give anything to be in the position we're in. I was just a little, this is how I felt about this press conference in the moment. It was like, don't BS me and don't condescend.
It was weird. I'll tell you, man, there's not a lot of coaches and GMs that I actually enjoy listening to. And Brandon Bean is actually one of them. And I agree with you too, by the way. It's like, and this doesn't happen often, not in the Buffalo media, at least not on the football side. It happens a lot on the hockey side, quite frankly. But big times mainstream media, that would be the equivalent of them saying, you know what, you're a podcaster, you're a blogger. Don't waste my time. You know what I'm talking about? It was kind of big time. And Brandon Bean sort of did that a little bit with the,
We're pros. We see these guys every day. Okay.
Now, and I will say this too. I thought it was a little unfair. I mean, I watched the whole thing. You did too. Like, the national media kind of took one quote that he said and they misrepresented it about Jamar Chase. Like, he was dissing the Bengals, saying he was basically saying, we don't want to have to get to a point where we're a bad team for a few years. We're in a position to draft a guy in the top five. That's what he was saying.
My beef with that comment, glad you brought that comment up, Pat, because that was another spot where I did have beef with, but not what the beef on Twitter was. People were like, he's insulting the Bengals. He wasn't insulting the Bengals at all. Shut up. Yeah. People are so sensitive about that type of stuff. That wasn't what he was doing. But it was a cop-out to this conversation about Ed Oliver. He did have a high pick. He picked Ed Oliver. And to your point, he's not an all pro. He's not Jamar Chase level at his position. And so to me, it felt a little bit of a cop out. And he was copping out on Gabe Davis a little bit. And the fact that Gabe Davis hasn't produced to the level of a T. Higgins, saying like, we don't have these types of weapons because we had to pay a Stephon Diggs. Well, kind of bullshit, because I think you have the weapons and the people internally have not put them in a position to give you the type of production that these other teams are getting out of their weapons. And so have that conversation. I don't need you to roast Ken Dorsey, but that one felt again like a bit of a cop out, used Carl salesman-y, like, well, you know what, that pick that you traded, again, playing hindsight, that pick that you traded for Stephon Diggs, who now you're complaining a little bit in the media about that contract that you got to pay out to him. Well, the Minnesota Vikings got Justin Jefferson for that pick on a rookie contract, who's equivalent to Ja'Marr Chase. So your whole premise, your whole idea was a cop-out, and it kind of had huge holes in the logic. Didn't make sense. So yeah, there felt like a couple moments of cop-outs in this one. And it's weird because I respect the shit out of Brandon Bean. And those would be things I would like to ask a little bit, you know, more and push a little bit more to get a little more clarity from him on that. And didn't seem anyone push back.
I want to let everyone who's listening or watching this on YouTube know that I think next week I want to focus more on the players. I don't think this roster is going to have the turnover that a lot of
projecting
fans. We do, yeah. But I still don't think there's going to be significant turnover.
I think you see a lot of similar parts. The turnover you see won't be huge improvements in those areas. It'll be similar players.
Exactly. And next week I want to focus on that. And I do want to spend a lot of time next week talking about Gabe Davis. I'll tell you though, the angriest of fans are calling for Sean McDermott's head. Let's not waste a second of anyone's time. That shit ain't happening. It would be a very big surprise if either Ken Dorsey or Leslie Frazier are gone. Never say never though. And again, we are taping this Thursday. Now we're into late morning Thursday. Jim Salgado, the safeties coach, it was announced literally a minute or so before we started taping this show, got fired. I don't know. Maybe my statement was wrong when it comes to Dorsey or Frazier. Do you think it's just going to be a couple or maybe even just one low level coach who gets the axe because of their performance on Sunday? Or do you think maybe this might lead to more?
Yeah. So I tweeted out right as we were going live here. I think this one was a little weird to me with Salgado because he was praised a ton.
I didn't know they had a safeties coach, by the way. I'm going
to
be honest.
Well, it used to be, Babich. Right, was the safeties coach. And then I think he moved into the linebacker role. I'm trying to remember all the movement they had. And then Butler became the DB coach. But Salgado was your nickel coach a couple years ago when Taron Johnson came into the league. And this was, I think, the first where they had a specialized nickel coach. I don't think teams are really doing that in the NFL. And he was praised a ton for the development of Taron Johnson into this nickel role, which really... Again, I think a lot of people talk about Sean McDermott being this conservative dude in a lot of ways, and fortunately shows up on the defensive side of the ball. It's trending, right? It is. You now are seeing how much success the Bengals had from the nickel position with Mike Hilton. Like, it is revolutionized a little bit the way the game is played. So I was a little surprised to see him be somebody that takes the blame. But safeties were running around a little bit confused. Even at Jordan Poyer confused. This one's a weird one, though. There's a lot of injuries. Like, you lose a Micah Hyde, and Jordan Poyer's patched up. I don't know how much is on the safety coach there, but I do think the Bills are going to take a bottom-up approach, right? Tinkering the bottom part of your roster, your depth pieces, working through some of these maybe positional coaches. I think Eric Washington should probably be on the chopping block because he's been given AJ Epenesa, Boogie Basham, Ed Oliver. These young assets have been poured into this line, and it took us having to go out and splurge on a Von Miller to start to get any type of production from this unit. I think Root's good. I don't know that Eric Washington made him good or not, right? Like, we don't know that he's able to develop these guys. I think he's one. I don't think Cromer's there yet, even though the offensive line seemingly can't develop guys. I think you got to give him a little time, and he's got the resume to be there. I think Chad Hall is still probably good. I don't think you see a ton of movement, but you'll see some tweaking here along the bottom of this roster and these coaches.
Well, and we'll spend some time next week talking about tweaking. And I would say too, by this time next week, if coaches are let go, that it'll probably happen by next week. So we'll have
I think here through the next couple of days, this is happening. I think Brandon Bean and Haley, his wife, tweeted out about they're leaving, they're packing up and getting ready to leave Buffalo for the winter. So I think business is almost done here at the end of this week.
One other thing too, and then I want to get to our fill in the blank, our fun little segment that we're ending these shows with. A lot of people, a lot of Bills fans specifically, big mad at Bengals players and fans over, you know, their reactions and how they, you know, calling them sore winners, whatever. Now, I want to, and this isn't really a question for you, it's kind of more or less just a statement. Eli Apple, over the top with what he tweeted, you know, the Damar Hamlin symbol and stuff like that, and he apologized after. That sounded like an agent sent him a tweet and said, you better get this shit out right now. But anyway, that aside, players talking shit, fans talking shit, I have 0.0 problem with it, because I'm going to tell you right now, Aaron, if this would have been the other way around and the Bills went to Cincinnati and smacked them around in the playoffs. If you don't think for 2 seconds that Jordan Phillips and Shaq Lawson would have been, you know, cutaway shots of them on the sideline, talking shit, Stephon Diggs talking shit, it's what players do. I got no problem with the rest of the Bengals and what they said and how they acted and their fans talking shit, because I'm sorry, and I'm not picking on Bills Mafia here, because all fan bases are the same to some extent. I remember early in the year when the Bills didn't punt. Oh, you guys punt? Can't imagine, can't relate. You know what I'm saying? Fans talk shit. The Bills, if you don't think Bills fans would have been talking shit to Cincinnati had they smacked them around, you're freaking crazy, because they would have, just like our players. It's part of the game. It's part of the sport. So get over it. You don't want it to happen. Play, but have your team play better.
Eli Apple aside, for sure. There's a conversation that's always going on in the Cover One DM group where there's a few of our guys that really engage with fan bases from other teams, and I just don't ever see it. I really don't. I see people tweet about like, oh, this fan base. I just don't engage with the fans of other teams. I am a fan. I just don't, either I don't see it or I ignore it or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I just don't care. I don't give a I know how obnoxious some of our fans can be, and I don't want to deal with the loudest, most obnoxious fans of the other teams. I just don't do it. Right. This week I did it, and it was terrible. But it was because of Eli Apple. I can't take Eli Apple out of it, because I ended up looking like one of these baby fans that is mad because we lost, and that's not the case at all. I respect the Bengals. I've given them nothing but praise. But he was over the line, and his bullshit went too far, and he's not that good of a player. He's a mediocre cornerback that celebrates overthrows, and he's been pretty below average his entire career, and he talks so much shit like he's Deion Sanders. And I was emotional. I think maybe now in hindsight, the Cancun on Three was not a DeMar Hamlin reference, but goddamn it, the way he put it out there with the heart hands made it seem like maybe he was poking a little bit to go there, and then dialed it back when he saw the response. So kind of I don't want to swear on your podcast, but kind of I'm still in an F him mode, and I can't wait to see him fail again, because I know it's going to happen. He's not a good player. He's going to get roasted at some point in the next couple of weeks if they continue. And I think he is what he kind of poured gas into a situation that was bound to combust on Twitter. I think if you removed him from this situation, it would just been the normal level of KC fans are annoying because they win and they talk shit. I don't mind shit talking. And here, Bills fans need to learn, if you're going to interact on Twitter right now, I think KC and Cincinnati can talk all the shit they want, Pat. Bills fans, we can talk shit to Jets, Dolphins, Patriots. We can talk all those. They all need to shut the me and sit down. I don't want to hear anything from any AFC East teams, but those other teams at the top, we need to wait till we overcome that hump before we get back in shit talking.
Eli Apple's comments made me go from being all in, I wanted the Bengals to beat the Chiefs, to kind of having no horse in the race. I really don't give a shit about either of those teams.
Yeah, go NFC.
They can both suck it, but yeah, man.
Let's go Eagles.
The rest of the players, though, I'm telling you, man, don't tell me Shaq Lawson would have been like, better go get your refund, because they were talking about, you know, buying tickets for Atlanta for the next
week. Everyone's petty, for sure.
It is, and it would include Bills fans and Bills players as well, so let's just call it what it is. All right, anyway, let's end the show with, we started this last week. Each week I'm going to ask you three questions, basically a fill-in-the-blank. Might be sports, pop culture, your life, things like that. It's an opportunity, like I said, for fans to just get to know a little bit more on the personal side about us. So here's the first one. My favorite subject back in high school was blank.
Skipping class and hanging out in the hallway. Dude, I was
Student?
Dude, I was not good at high school. I was a barely scrape by. I did graduate, but it wasn't pretty. It took a lot of work. I just didn't give a shit. I like girls and playing basketball, and that was it. So not a lot of subjects. I guess one thing I did have, I don't know if you ever experienced this, because I wasn't a good student, we had a vocational school in my area where multiple high schools would go, and I took a marketing class there, and there was a marketing group called DECA, and I became part of that, and actually I think it is what saved me and allowed me to graduate, because I couldn't do those things that I would like to do if I didn't keep my other grades up. But it was really cool. I traveled around the country a bunch. I competed in marketing competitions, and those skills have sort of translated in life later here. I didn't end up going to college for it or anything, but it was fun, and I think it kept me graduating high school. So marketing but not a lot of kids got that opportunity to have a marketing as a subject.
I wasn't a good student academically, but I liked going to high school. I liked the socializing aspect.
Oh, I loved homework,
girls, just being in school. It was
school
fun.
Dances.
I was not a good student either. I guess I would say probably American history, because it was one of the very few subjects in school that actually I would have any interest in. All right. Not counting your birth name, the name you wish your parents would have given you at birth is, and I'm going to tell you before you answer that, whatever name you pick is going to be your name on the display here for next on the YouTube side for next week's show.
I don't honestly, like, this was I've never thought of my name. Like, maybe that's weird that I never, like, why do my parents name me this? Or I like my name. I think it flows well. It balances well. So I like where I'm at. But I always tease that when I had a kid and my wife was like, you're an absolute idiot. That is not happening. That I would name him Apollo. And so I'm picking Apollo Quinn. I like it. It Apollo feels like Apollo Creed. I love the Apollo Creed character. As much as I hate the Rocky movies, I love Apollo.
That is fucking hilarious that you said that. More on that in just literally a minute. But anyway, Apollo Quinn. All right. There's no reason for this. It's not even as a cool name. For whatever reason, I've always liked the name Trevor. Like, I almost named my kid Trevor. The only reason why I didn't is because a couple friends of mine had kids before me and they named their kid Trevor. So I was like, I'm not going to do it. Also, because of wrestling, my son's name is Shane. My wife pushed Sheamus on us hard. So Sheamus Moran would have been a pretty cool name. I kind of like my name too, though. Maybe it's just because we've had it our whole life and we're used to it. But all right. So Trevor Moran here and Apollo Quinn. Let's get to the last question. An actor that seems absolutely born to play the role they did would be blank.
I'm going to total cop out here, Pat. I'm going against the rules. I'm taking the entire cast of Harry Potter. Did you ever read those books?
The Harry Potter books?
In
the movies.
Like, very few times I feel like in my mind does a book translate to film and what I think people look like and what the characters are going to be. And goddamn, dude, like, the way I got here was Severus Snape. I think that character was, like, perfectly cast by how I read him in the book. But then I started thinking, like, well, so was Harry and so was Hermione and, like, all the Fred and all the Weasleys. Like, that whole movie was perfect. Whoever, I know Joe's a big casting guy. Whoever casted that, kudos to them. So I'm copping out all of Harry Potter.
I started laughing when you were talking about being Apollo Quinn because you said you hate the Rocky franchise, which is funny because my answer to this question is Sylvester Stallone for Rocky. Yeah. I know you hate the franchise. I obviously don't. I just think he was perfect for the role. A tough, you know, I don't want to say athletic, but a tough Italian good-looking dude who's dumb as a box of rocks and talks like it as well. It just I can't imagine anyone else. And again, if you don't like the franchise, maybe you don't give a shit, but
right,
I do like it. I can't ever imagine anyone else having played Rocky besides Sylvester Stallone.
Sort of where else my mind went for a runner-up was basically anything Jim Carrey ever did. I feel like roles were literally written for him and Chris Farley. Like, movies were written around them and their look and their humor. And so everything was perfectly cast.
Yeah, I agree. All right, guys, that'll do it for this episode. You know, normally I say make sure you check out Aaron and Greg. Podcast, you know, after every Bills game and during the week for a preview game. So let people know, though, like, do you have a semi-set schedule for how things are going to be? Not for Cover One so much, but at least for you and Greg specifically going forward now for a while.
Yeah, I think you'll see some rotation of us taking some time off here coming up. But we will be back. I believe we're going to stay on Wednesday. So Wednesday's at 9. That's always been our time slot. We'll probably stick there and expect at least content coming out every week.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you, Aaron. Be back. New episodes next week. Take care. Have a safe weekend.